You are Locked On Giants, your daily podcast on the New York Giants. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants. I'm Ed Valentine, editor of Big Blue View, your host for today's show. Our usual co-host, Pat Traina of Inside Football and The Athletic, is unable to join us today. But we're here, we're talking Giants, and we're going to do something today to try to get us away from some of the constant Odell Beckham chatter that we've been involved with for the past few days. Today, I would like to play for you an interview that I was lucky enough to be able to do with Mary Kay Cabot, veteran Cleveland Browns beat writer for Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So let's get right to that. Giants fans, I'm joined now by Mary Kay Cabot, Cleveland.com and Cleveland Plain Dealer beat writer for the Browns. And since we know there's thought we'd talk to Mary Kay today, since there's a lot of interest with the upcoming draft, between what the Browns and the Giants will do. So, Mary Kay, thanks for taking a few minutes.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, so before we get into the serious stuff, I'd ask you a quick question. You know, it's been a long time since the Browns have been good. And, you know, we've dealt with the Giants for the last year or so with a little bit of that insanity of covering a football team that hasn't been good, you know, where a lot of the stories are not football related. You've been doing this for a while. I need some advice. How do I keep my sanity while I try to do this?
Well, I don't know. Mine went out the window a long, long time ago, so I'm probably not the best person to ask. But, no, really, you know, you just find the stories. You focus on the stories, and you just keep, you just keep writing and feeding the beast. And that's what, I'll tell you what, think about this. Even though the Browns have not been good since they came back in 1999, they are still always in the news. Do you notice that? I mean, every time you turn around, there are Browns headlines going on. So I think that's the key, is just to continue to mine for the stories and to find them and focus on what's going on in the draft and all those sorts of things.
Well, there's certainly, these days for the Giants, they're certainly not hard to find. And, you know, before we get to the guy who's creating a lot of those, let's talk about a couple of other things involving the Browns and the Giants. Pat Shurmur, obviously coached in Cleveland for a couple of years. Give Giants fans your thoughts on Pat Shurmur and whether you think he'll succeed in New York.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that stands out to me about Pat Shurmur is that he just got caught up in an ownership change. And, you know, when you have that kind of a transition, you know, you see the writing on the wall. People are going to bring in their own people, and, things are going to change. So, when Joe Banner, you know, came along and Jimmy Haslam purchased the team, you just knew the change was afoot and that he probably wasn't going to be long for the team. They were going to want to start all over with a whole new regime, and that's basically what happened. He didn't get a chance there, just like most of the other coaches in Cleveland have not gotten a chance over the years. And that's why you have a lack of continuity. That's why you have, you know, hardly any of their first-round draft picks. I think most of their first-round draft picks, you know, from 2009 on are gone. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that happen when you keep changing regimes, general managers, and coaches. But I think that Pat Shurmur will do a nice job there. I think he learned from a lot of his mistakes here. I think that one of the biggest things that you learn as a head coach is just how much the media demands, just what a large chunk of your job that is, and I'm sure it'll be even more magnified in New York. So he's going to be in the microscope, in the fishbowl, and I actually think Cleveland was a pretty good training ground for him in that regard, because even though, you know, this is not the New York media, it's not necessarily obviously the Philadelphia media or anything to that level, it's still a large media contingent. There's still a lot of eyes on the Browns, and it still, it was a lot of people to have to answer to. There was a lot of critics here. So I actually think it was pretty good media training for him here.
The one question that I have had about Shurmur, you know, the Giants just went through a situation for the last 2 years with Ben McAdoo where, you know, McAdoo was an offensive coordinator, continued to call the offensive plays, you know, while he was head coach. And, you know, in my view, one of the issues with Ben was that there were times when he couldn't see over his play card, when he couldn't see the rest of the team or communicate with the rest of the team or really, you know, build relationships, you know, throughout the entire locker room. And obviously Pat's going to call the plays in New York. You know, that he's already decided. But personality-wise, you know, can he do that and still, you know, reach out and control and have relationships with the rest of the locker room?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, he did it here. The only thing about doing it here is that he also did it in his first year here when he really could have used some help. If you're going to call the plays, that's fine, but you need I think you still need an offensive coordinator who is going to, you know, help run the meetings and really do a lot of the hands-on things that you can't do. You cannot devote 100% of the time to the offense when you're the head coach. So you have to have a right-hand man that you absolutely 100% trust implicitly and someone who I think will collaborate on the play calling with you, but someone who can, you know, if you need to step out of the meeting, and you will need to, that he's running the show and that he is in lockstep with you with how you do things and how you think about things. So he did not have that person his first year in Cleveland, and then he did have Brad Childress his second year, and I think that was helpful. But I just think that, you know, he can call his own plays. Plenty of guys do. But you just need to have your right-hand man.
Is he tougher than he looks, maybe, just in terms of, you know, personality-wise and how he deals with players?
Oh, he's plenty tough. There's no question about that. He's sort of a little bit, comes off as somewhat quiet, but he's not quiet. He's a very strong personality. And I will also say that, I mean, I don't want to say that he's got a little bit of a temper, but he can get pretty hot. He can get pretty hot about things. We've seen it. He got into a on-the-field argument with Joe Hayden one day. And, you know, you just know when he's not happy about something once you get to know him a little bit. And you guys will see that, I would imagine, you know, pretty early on in the process.
Interesting, you know, because that the personality and the quiet, you know, when we've seen him in his press conferences, that's what comes off is that he seems kind of reserved, but that there's some steel behind it.
Well, you know what? He's getting the lay of the land, which is exactly what he should be doing. He's feeling it out. He doesn't know yet anybody in the media. He's just getting to know people in the building. He's just getting to know the players. And he knows now. And that's, again, one of the things I talk about. When you're a head coach and you come into a new situation, you know, I think that having that learning curve under his belt already of being a head coach for the first time, I think he now knows that you have to do that. I mean, you really have to survey the land and figure out, you know, what the power structure is and what the locker room is like and, you know, who is aligned with who and, you know, how people in the media do certain things and how are things going to be portrayed. So he's just in that, you know, fact-finding mode right now. He's, you know, he's trying to figure everything out, but you know, once he gets his sea legs, you will see that he's a very strong-minded person and a very take-charge person and really probably not what you think he is.
So, okay, so we have to switch gears a little bit. Obviously, Cleveland has the first and the fourth pick in the draft. The Giants have, you know, the second pick. So in terms of as you use the word trying to figure things out. So every Giants fan wants to know, you know, what is Cleveland going to do with the first pick? What are they going to leave for the Giants at number two? So spill the beans for us.
Well, I firmly believe that the Browns are going to take a quarterback at number one overall. Now, there has been some talk, and you probably saw on the Dan Patrick show where, you know, he reported that – The Browns are just feigning interest in Sam Darnold so they can bait the Giants to come up and grab that number one pick, and then the Browns would take Josh Allen at number two. Is there any truth to that? I really don't know, but I do think that this draft lends itself to some wheeling and dealing and some talking amongst the first three teams involved with those first four picks. You're talking about the Browns, the Giants, and the Jets. The Browns, again, have the fourth pick. So, you know, some things can happen with those first few picks, and then, of course, you have other teams that might want to jump up there. So, you know, I think they're doing a good job of playing it close to the vest, of putting out, you know, different things about, you know, who they may or may not pick. You know, now they're talking up Saquon Barkley. But you know what, Pat, I will say this, you know, Pat is not immune to, you know, to throwing people off with what they're going to do in the draft because, you know, who knows? I mean, if they can end up with the player that they want and also some draft picks out of the deal, I'm sure that they would be up for that too. So what you're hearing might not necessarily be what they're actually thinking about doing, but that's how it is with everybody in the draft at this time of year.
Sure, it's that time of year where you you don't take as gospel anything that you hear right now.
No, not at all. And, you know, he's played that game before, and he knows, you know, he knows how to do it very well. He's done it as a head coach before. So he knows how to do it. They had the number four overall pick here in 2012, and they actually traded up to number three and took Trent Richardson. But, you know, they put out some smoke signals that year when they did that. And, you know, so he, like I said, he knows how to play that game. He knows how to have this high of a pick and what that all entails.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know everybody seems to think, you know, and I do as well, I think that the Giants pretty much have to be open for business at number two. It sounds like you sort of think that both at one and four that the Browns would also be, you know, if you want to use that term, open for business if the right offer came along.
Yeah, I mean, you know, John Dorsey's made it clear that he is open for business, and you know, rightfully so, because what if the Giants do want to move up to number one and are willing to give up something for that, and the Browns can get the player that they wanted all along at number two and still end up with a draft pick. So you have to say that. I don't think that he's, you know, lying or stretching the truth there by any stretch of the imagination. I think that, again, there are some options at one, two, three, and four, especially with the quarterbacks. And depending on who's doing what, you know, you just might be able to move back a spot or two. So I think it behooves, you know, the Giants to, you know, to sort of have that out there. It behooves the Browns to do so. And with the quarterbacks that are available in this draft, there will be interest in those top four picks. There definitely will be interest, and the phones will be ringing.
Is this a little different for you with the Browns, with John Dorsey? I mean, so many changes over the years with the Browns. Does it feel a little different with Dorsey in terms of the way he's going about things and the direction he's kind of got the Browns pointed in?
Well, it's different than it has been the last two seasons. I mean, they were in, you know, sort of teardown mode and acquiring draft picks over the last two seasons. And, you know, that's completely opposite of what John Dorsey's doing. He's come in here with a swagger, and he's tearing it up. I mean, he is just overhauling, trading away, you know, getting rid of, fixing mistakes. So, yes, it is a different feel, and it's a different philosophy. I mean, this is a, you know, the traditional football guy who has come up in the game, playing the game, you know, scouting a lot, being in dark rooms, watching film, being out in stadiums, and this is completely different than what was going on with Sashi Brown when those guys were following the more analytics approach and going by the numbers and things of that nature. So definitely different vibe in Cleveland.
So let's talk about the other topic, you know, with the Giants these days and, you know, all the news kind of, you know, circulating around what's been going on with Odell Beckham. And, you know, we kind of get into that fishbowl where, you know, we see the Giants and we see Beckham and we see the contract. I'm curious, you know, from more of an outside perspective, you know, from where you are, I mean, what is the thought process? What do you see or what do you think of, you know, when I ask you about Odell Beckham in terms of a player and in terms of the kind of guy that he is?
Well, I mean, you know, I really only know him from what has been portrayed, you know, on social media and on television and, in the media in general. So I look at him as, a difficult player that would have to be managed and would have to be handled by the right people. And, I wrote a column the other day outlining the 12 reasons that the Browns should try to trade for Odell Beckham Jr. And some of those reasons include the fact that I think they have the people here that know him and could handle him. They have here Adam Henry, who of course, was his wide receivers coach not only with the Giants the last 2 years, but at LSU. He also coached Jarvis Landry, who's now with the Browns, and he's also lobbying for Odell Beckham Jr. to come here. So I just outlined all these different reasons why I think it would make sense. I think this is a team on the rise. I think if Cleveland had Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., Josh Gordon, Duke Johnson, Carlos Hyde, Tyrod Taylor, David Njoku, that this can be an explosive offense pretty quickly. So the thought of coming to an 0-16 team, I just don't even think that has to be in the thinking of any of these players anymore, because it's not that anymore. I think he seems to me to be a difficult personality, but I think they've got Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley, Ken Zampezi, and Adam Henry, who could really handle a guy like that and help keep him in line.
It's interesting, because I just don't know. You've seen these kinds of things before with the kinds of things the Giants have said lately, and I just wonder if they're serious about moving him. I can't quite get a feel for if they actually would, or if part of this is just part of the contract dance.
Well, you know what? I mean, I have to wonder. I feel like I almost got, the trade thing rolling that morning when I put out there 12 reasons why the Browns should try to trade for Odell Beckham Jr.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like things just kind of took off from there. Again, maybe I'm taking too much credit for the craziness that turned into, but it just seems like things kind of, took off from there. But you know what? I mean, teams have inquired about trading for him and have actually had conversations about it. So, I think from that standpoint, things have been going on. Now, would they want to move him? I mean, there's a report out there from, I think it's from Adam Schefter, saying that they would want 2 first-round picks. And that's basically, saying that, we're not that interested in moving him. So, it's hard to say. We don't know what's going on in their minds right now. It seems like they want to get something done and that they don't want to trade him. But, if someone makes them an offer that they can't refuse, and I propose that they should trade for that the Browns should send Corey Coleman to the Giants in exchange for Odell Beckham as part of the deal, not an even swap, because Corey also needs a change of scenery. So if his act has worn thin in New York and they are ready for a change of scenery for him, I do think that they have some options.
Interesting. Hey, Mary Kay, I really appreciate your time. It seems like, the Giants and the Browns are a little bit tied at the hip here for the next month, with everything that's going on. So, if anything does happen between Cleveland and the Giants, maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you again.
Sure, sounds good. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Mary Kay Cabot for dropping some Cleveland Browns insight on us. Always nice to get a different perspective on the draft, on other NFL teams, on things that involve the Giants. And with that said, Giants fans, I think we will call it a show for today. As always, we thank you for listening. We appreciate your support of Locked On Giants. And we're always glad that you read my stuff at Big Blue View and Patty's stuff at Inside Football, Big Blue View, The Athletic, all of the places that she works. And we'll be back with you again next week. All right, thanks and bye-bye now.